White System and tune in to the Per White System at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Boxing Day and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. Well, this is the third part of our Christmas specials where we're looking back over 2018 and we got up to June yesterday. Now, also in June, we had some really surprising news, actually. And this is a real credit to the Trump presidency. Donald Trump went to meet with Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-un announced that North Korea will now denuclearize. And I've always said that I thought that Donald Trump would get on well with Kim Jong-un. And you have to give the guy credit. He's a young man, very young man, with no experience that's been put there to lead his country. And he's managed to, despite all the sanctions against the country, despite all the hurdles that he's had to overcome, he's managed to be technically proficient enough to be able to produce nuclear warheads that were capable of hitting America, which definitely gave him a bargaining chip. And he's used that bargaining chip. And he managed to get the meeting with Donald Trump that he wanted. And that, of course, that's a great triumph for Kim Jong-un. And it's also a great triumph for Donald Trump that he's managed to get Kim Jong-un to step down the nuclear program, basically. And he blew up the tunnels where all the tests were done. And apparently everything's going ahead as planned. And this really, you would have thought, this really would have shut the mainstream media up with their criticism of Donald Trump all the time. But of course, it didn't, but that was great news anyway, the Kim Jong-un summit that they had in Singapore. Also in June, we had some really interesting news, and I think this was, you know, a very important bit of news, actually, and this came from Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, obviously, who I do a podcast with on Thursdays and also does the Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesdays, and he'd been investigating the Mongol invasion under Genghis Khan. And he gave us the news that the Mongols were in actual fact white. They weren't Asians. They weren't Mongoloids. The word Mongols itself seems to come from a root word that means magnificent. It doesn't come from the root word that means Mongoloid. And his evidence for this, if you go to Mongolia, there's nothing there that celebrates the idea that Mongols, or Mongoloids rather, actually took over half of Europe and took over Russia. There's nothing there about that. There's nothing in Russia that talks about Chinese people coming in and taking them over. And if you look at the area that Genghis Khan came from, that was filled with Sarmatians and Scythians, which were white people. And the final evidence for this is if you look at the DNA of the Russian people, there's no traces of Mongoloid DNA in there. And there would be if the Mongoloids had interbred with them, that they would definitely be part Chinese. And they're clearly not. And the DNA just is not there. So he came out with this stunning revelation, really, that the Mongols were white. He did a whole episode on it. Lev Gumilev is the title of the Orthodox Nationalist episode. It's something about Lev Gumilev Part 2, which is talking about this. And also, of course, this comes from Russian research, which is written in the Russian language, which not many Westerners are able to translate and understand. So I found that a particularly interesting bit of news from 2018. And then we get to July, and in July, Simon Shepherd was jailed. Thankfully, Simon is now released from jail. He's able to get back on with his research. He never should have been in jail in the first place. He was accused of using a racially explicit language to a Sky television repairman within the earshot of a non-white. And he was also accused of mounting a campaign of intimidation of this non-white. And he was found not guilty of mounting the campaign of intimidation, but he was found guilty of using a racially explicit word within the earshot of his next door neighbour, Negro. And he was jailed for 6 months for this. As the trial was actually happening, the Negro refused to turn up a few times. Three times he didn't even bother to turn up. And normally in a case like that, if the person making the allegations can't even be bothered to turn up at court, the judge will just throw it out of court. But this judge said that because this was such an important case that Simon had used a naughty word, the case must continue. And as the trial was actually ongoing and the Negro came in, the Negro was a security guard, a huge guy that is used to throwing people out of nightclubs. Simon Shepherd is an intellectual character. He's not a bruiser type. At all. He doesn't come across as imposing at all or overbearing or intimidating. Yet when the Negro witness came into the court, they erected all these whiteboards around Simon Shepherd so that the Negro didn't have to see him because the Negro said he would be intimidated by him. Of course, the truth is the Negro may have found it a little bit more awkward to actually lie if he'd met Simon Shepherd's gaze. I think that's more the truth of it rather than he was intimidated by him. But anyway, that's what happened. This seems to be a part of these cases now. Cases where Negroes make accusations of hate crimes against white people instead of them actually having to face their accuser, which is part of British justice, that you should be able to face your accuser. These boards get put in the way. So the witness can effectively say whatever they like and lie to themselves that they're not actually saying it in front of the person that they are actually talking about. Anyway, thankfully, Simon Shepherd is now released, and I believe he's writing again for Heritage and Destiny. I do recommend people take up a subscription or buy separate copies of Heritage and Destiny. It's a fantastic British nationalist magazine. You can find a link to that at radioarian.com, or you can look up Heritage and Destiny. Also in July, the world was shocked to discover 12 Thai children and their soccer coach got stranded in a cave in Thailand. And you know, this really was, I think the whole world was following this story and hoping that these young lads would be rescued. They'd gone into this cave. Who knows why they went into the cave to get away from the water outside, because the cave just filled up with water. And I think most people had given up hope of ever finding them. And I don't think they would have been found if it had just been non-whites that had been looking for them. But white people got involved, particularly British people got involved. And it was British divers, white British divers, that eventually found this group in early July. I forget how long they'd been in there for, 2 weeks, something like that, with no food. The pictures came in showing us these poor, shivering, frightened young boys that are just waiting there on this rock. It must have been really horrific for them, thinking that they were eventually going to drown. But thanks to the ingenuity and the courage and the bravery of the white British divers, they were found and they were rescued. And that's really a testament to white people. And this is what we do. We are so charitable that we risk our own lives to rescue non-whites. And yet all the time we are being told that we're these nasty racists and that we're the ones that have ruined the world. The truth is that we do everything that we can to help other people. That's what comes naturally to us. And instead of celebrating that, and instead of encouraging our youth to be proud of their accomplishments, we're told that white pride is somehow a wrong thing. We can't have a white pride day. We have to have a gay pride day instead. We have to celebrate butt sex. We can't celebrate achievements such as white British divers rescuing a Thai football team from certain drowning. Surely something has got to change. I don't think people do nowadays see things such as white pride as racist. How can they when we have a gay pride day? Surely people can see the contradiction between not allowing a white pride day and allowing a gay pride day. Also in July, we had another Novichok poisoning. And we really weren't expecting this. A couple were poisoned by Novichok in Salisbury. And the reason for this poisoning was that the young man had found a perfume bottle and he'd given it to his partner. And his partner had obviously sprayed some of it onto her wrist and sniffed it in. His partner now has passed away. He's still alive, but obviously he's got nerve problems. And this just really showed the recklessness of whoever it was that carried out this hit on the Skripals. I mean, this is absolute reckless incompetence to then throw away the murder weapon, throw away a chemical weapon like that, where it could be found in a park by anybody that was just picked it up off the ground. I mean, it's just unbelievable that somebody could do this. To think that Russian intelligence would do that. That I find quite concerning, that they could think that another country would actually be prepared to do that, to take that risk. Not least of which because you've then got the murder weapon. I mean, whoever it was that carried out this hit on the Skripals, they were useless, worse than useless at trying to assassinate somebody. I mean, they failed to assassinate the guy. They left a trail. They left the murder weapon there, and they ended up taking out bystanders and completely innocent bystanders. I do find it hard to believe that this was a state action. And in actual fact, what Russia was doing in July, Russia was welcoming the Boers from South Africa. South African refugees, basically. The black government over there in South Africa has said that they're going to steal all the land from the white farmers. They're not going to pay any compensation for it. They're just going to take it. And this comes on top of years and years of white farmers being cruelly massacred in the most hideous, horrible ways that we just cannot even imagine as white people. The sort of horrific things these Negroes have done to these white farmers. In a lot of cases, the white farmers who were actually their bosses paid them their wages and looked on them as part of the family, and they just turned against them, carried out these hideous crimes. On top of that, they're now going to steal the land from them. So the South Africans have obviously been looking for somewhere else to go. They've asked for refugee status in some countries, and they've been turned down. I believe Australia has said that they will accept some of them. But Russia has kindly said that they would accept lots of them. I forget the actual number. It was either 1,000 or 10,000 of them. And they're going to be given land in Russia, temperate land. And they're going to be able to bring their livestock over from South Africa, which is unique livestock that's been interbred over hundreds of years to have a particular South African type, and they're going to turn this land in Russia into farmland, which is wonderful news. And another good part about this story is the Boers are obviously Protestants of an evangelical type. The evangelical Protestant type in South Africa was originally very racial, unlike the Zionist evangelicals that we get today. But because they are traditionalists, Russia is welcoming them. Don't forget, Russia is Orthodox. They don't really have Protestant evangelicals over there, and they tend to look down on Protestant evangelicals. But because these Boers, because these South Africans believe in tradition, they believe in traditional values, they believe in real Christian values, Russia and the Orthodox Church are welcoming them. So that was a really good news story there back in July. And we also had Donald Trump visiting Britain, and that was very entertaining to see. To see Donald Trump there with Theresa May answering these questions. And apparently he'd been a little bit rude about her, and the press tried to trip him up, and he refused to go along with it. And he said, look, if Theresa May goes ahead with the plan that she's done, America will not be able to do a deal with her. And he said that she should have done what he advised her to do at first. And we all thought, well, what is it he advised her to do at first? He advised her to sue the EU. Theresa May should not be paying the EU, trying to do deals with the EU. She should just be leaving the EU. That's what she was instructed to do. She was instructed to leave. Also, while Donald Trump was here, Sadiq Khan thought that he would try to insult the president by floating a tiny balloon, basically a helium balloon of an orange baby in a diaper. Obviously, that's not really the sort of thing that you would expect the mayor of London to allow to happen when the president of the United States visits Britain. This was clearly a personal issue. Sadiq Khan has got personal issues with Donald Trump, and he allowed his personal issues to interfere in the carrying out of his duties. Because he did this, because he allowed this balloon, some bright people then campaigned for a balloon of Sadiq Khan to be flown over the centre of London, which it duly was, and Sadiq Khan had to, well, he really had no option but to allow that to happen. So since then, we've also had a down with Sadiq Khan balloon that's been blown up and flown over London, which also got a lot of media attention. It was a great shame that Donald Trump didn't actually go to any stadiums and speak to the British people, because he does have a lot of support in Britain. He may not have this support in London, in the multicultural centres, but outside of London, he has plenty of support. Lots of people that I talk to have great respect for what he's done in America. People that are conservatives, that are wondering why the Conservative Party in Britain is now no longer conservative, they think Donald Trump's wonderful. They think he's great, and they want to know when we are going to have a Donald Trump in Britain. When are we going to have a real conservative that actually tries to conserve what is best about Britain instead of doing all they can to destroy it in the way that Theresa May is doing? Talking of destruction, over in France in July, they celebrated winning the World Cup by rioting and setting fire to cars. And this setting fire to cars thing is quite a tradition over there in France, in the multicultural ghettos that they have there. They also do it at Christmas. They also do it on New Year's Eve. It's been going on since immigration reached a certain level. When there are enough blacks and brown people in an area, then they just set fire to the cars on New Year's Eve. And they quite clearly thought that winning the World Cup was a good excuse for doing this as well. And of course, there were smashed windows, things set fire to, there were deaths, there were injuries, all sorts of things went on there. And you think, is this the way that people celebrate winning something now? They just destroy everything? Well, this, again, this is a racial thing. This is what blacks and browns do. It's not what white people do. When white people win an award, they tend to be magnanimous and charitable, and they forget any animosity that they may have with others because the country's just won something. But when you've got blacks and brown people, they just use it as an excuse to burn the bitch down. As I seem to remember various proponents of the black community saying in America, in August, after the World Cup, Tommy Robinson was finally freed from prison. And we were all really shocked to see the state of him. I mean, it looked like he had aged 10 years. In the 6 weeks or so that he was in prison, it looked like he had lost a stone in weight, possibly more than that. He was all gaunt and shrunken. You could tell that he was shaking. He was unable to talk to reporters. When he finally did do an interview, he couldn't stop crying. Every so often when he was talking, he would burst into tears. You could see the psychological damage that had been done to him while he was in prison. Because he was kept in this solitary confinement, he was also starved because the food was being prepared for him by Muslims, and the Muslims were shouting outside his window, "Enjoy your food, it's got ground glass in it," things like that. So all he could eat was what he could buy, and all he could buy was tinned tuna. So for the whole time, he'd been surviving on tuna. Where was Amnesty International while this was going on? Where was Amnesty International after he was released and it became known what had been done to him while he was in prison? And you think about it, the guy's being starved, he's in solitary confinement so that he can't talk to anybody else or interact socially with anybody else. And all he can hear from outside his window is aggression against him and hatred towards him. Anyone that criticizes him for his integrity, I think they really should take a look at themselves, because would you be able to go through all of that? I mean, this guy has really gone through the grinder for what he believes in. He may not believe in ethno-nationalism. He may be opposed to National Socialism, or what he perceives to be National Socialism. But the guy has integrity, and he is doing what he believes best for the British people. He's not doing what he does out of any desire to self-aggrandize. He's not doing it because he wants to be a celebrity. He's not doing it because he wants to make a lot of money. He's doing it because he believes in the British people, and he's a patriot, and he wants to expose the crimes that are being done against the British people. And I think he's doing a great job of it, and he really has highlighted what's going on to a lot of people that were unaware of it before and just didn't know where to go to find that information. These people can now look up Tommy Robinson online and they will find all the news that the BBC is not telling them about. Also in August, Tommy Robinson's former associates, InfoWars, were completely deplatformed. And this, obviously, it follows on from all the ethno-nationalists being deplatformed. That started with the Daily Stormer, it went on to include altright.com, various others that have been removed. Vanguard America, Britain First, Amren from Twitter. But what this actually showed with InfoWars being deplatformed was that all these mainstream platforms, they're all conspiring together, because InfoWars was deplatformed from Apple, YouTube, Spotify, all these various companies, all on the same day, from Twitter, all on the same day. So they're all working together to silence political dissent. And the great shame about this is, Why didn't InfoWars, why didn't Alex Jones speak up about it when it first happened to Andrew Anglin? I had my differences with Andrew Anglin, and I certainly had differences with some of the editorial policy at the Daily Stormer, but I do support his right to have his real estate on the internet and not be deplatformed. I do support his right to have his own site and have his opinions aired, as long as he's not inciting violence, which he has never done. But he was deplatformed. As I say, all these other organizations were deplatformed. Alex Jones never spoke up about it. And now Alex Jones himself has been deplatformed. Of course, I would not advocate then not standing up for Alex Jones, because he didn't stand up for us. I believe in rising above things like that. That's where the turning the other cheek comes in. And you say, well, okay, InfoWars didn't stand up for us, but I will still stand up for InfoWars, because it's the principle that matters. This isn't a game of tit for tat. This is about getting the truth out there. And InfoWars is a gateway to more harder truth websites. Also in August, we had good news from Australia. Fraser Anning called for a referendum. He said the reasons for ending all further Muslim immigration are both compelling and self-evident. The record of Muslims who have already come to this country in terms of rates of crime, welfare dependency and terrorism are the worst of any migrant and vastly exceed any other immigrant group. The majority of Muslims in Australia of working age do not work and exist on welfare. Muslims in New South Wales and Victoria are three times more likely than other groups to be convicted of crimes. We have black African Muslim gangs terrorizing Melbourne. We have ISIS sympathizing Muslims trying to go overseas to try and fight for ISIS. And while all Muslims are not terrorists, certainly all terrorists these days are Muslims. So why would anyone want to bring any more of them here? What a breath of fresh air that was. And he was calling for a referendum on it. And this is the first time that I'm aware that any Western country has called for a referendum on immigration, has actually called for the members of the country to decide on whether their country should be invaded. So great to hear that coming from Australia. And Fraser Anning has said a lot of good things since then. Okay, that brings us to the end of the Daily Nationalist for today. I will be back tomorrow for a live edition of the Daily Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. So I hope to see you all then. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.